We must say that either those who want it to cause our destruction must perish, those who think we must perish, and in that case our Soviet Republic will live, or the capitalists will live, and in that case the Republic will perish. End of quotation. Who said that? Lenin said that. Who will conquer whom? That is the whole question. The world is divided into two camps. Who said that? Joseph Stalin. Have those militaristic doctrines been repudiated by the Kremlin? No. Therein lies the challenge, my friends, to the free world. That then is the third factor, the merciless intention of the Kremlin to control the world, an intention which has not been fundamentally changed in spite of the so-called Soviet peace offensive now in full blast. But now we come to the fourth factor in answer to our question. We ask again, can mankind endure half slave and half free? The answer is that mankind must, for a long time it must, learn to endure the present division without resorting to war. Why? Because the nature of modern super weapons is such that a third world war could be a thing of utter horror to mankind. A third world war would leave us no victor and vanquished, would not leave victor and vanquished, but two rubble heaps, a two charred continent or more of radioactive ashes where once there were cities and farms. One side might be less destroyed than the other, but the victory would be barren indeed. And what conditions would follow such a so-called victory? Would the world be free? More prosperous? Happier? Of course not. Would all slavery be ended? No. Chaos and disaster breeds more problems, including slavery. So this evil legacy of a third world war, a nuclear Armageddon, could continue for a period a further time that no man now living would endure. Could continue for a period of further time that no man living could measure. To talk lightly of the possibilities of war is therefore, and I say this, of highest irresponsibility. To engage loosely in hurling ultimatums, in blustering threats from one side or the other is inexcusable. Somehow, no matter how serious the crisis, we must find peaceful means to try to settle it. This does not mean appeasement, because we know appeasement is self-defeating. But it does mean exhausting every last alternative in every last situation in the interest of peace. Too many Americans lose patience too soon. Too many Americans are too willing to throw up their hands in dismay and ask for final action. When the Peking government outrageously imprisoned U.S. chairman, U.S. airmen, the suggestion was made that we ultimately hurl an ultimatum with an early fixed deadline, that we ignore the contrary opinions of the United Nations, that if necessary, unilaterally impose a blockade upon Red China. Well, such a blockade could have meant the death of every airman we have been trying to save. Could have meant the starting of a chain reaction which might lead to World War III. The motives of those Americans who made the suggestions were high and patriotic. No one would quarrel with their deep feelings for our imprisoned countrymen. But we who disagreed did have a legitimate case against what was, in effect, loose suggestions whose ominous consequences had not been sufficiently thought out. Now there'll be more crises to come. Each year will offer new challenges, new pitfalls, new dangers. Soviet tactics, now relatively soft, may return to the belligerent Stalinist line overnight. You know, it was Lord Palmerston, the English Prime Minister, who said a century ago, speaking about Russia, he said, you know, Russia will continue to push out and out until she is stopped, then she will pull back. And then she will regroup, and when she's ready, she will push again. Perhaps that gives us a little insight on what is doing now in the Kremlin's so-called superficial retreat. But as for ourselves, we must go ahead with courage, with confidence, with faith, with readiness to fight if need be, but with determination to avoid possible the fighting, and with honor and with justice. The forthcoming meeting in San Francisco on the occasion of the 10th anniversary of the signing of the United Nations Charter offers real possibilities for new exploration by the foreign ministers of East-West problems. The meeting at the summit, which will follow thereafter, possibly in late July, offers still more possibilities for some progress in resolving East-West tensions. But no single meeting at San Francisco or Lausanne or anywhere else will solve the basic problem. In 10 years, we have literally had thousands of meetings with Soviet negotiators on hundreds of issues, and we know the pitfalls of negotiating with them. We recall how time after time they cruelly disappointed the hopes of the world, how they build up some of us for an awful letdown. This time, we are wary. This time, we are not oversold on the possibilities of successful negotiation. But neither should we allow our hope and the hope of the world and our confidence to fade so that we become filled with fear or doubt or anxiety. We've seen the heights to which men could rise to win a war. We've seen the heights to which men could rise in peace. This nation rose magnificently to the challenge of World War II and the Korean conflict. It rose just as magnificently to the challenge of healing the wounds of World War II. The old program, the aid program, which the people of the United States generally extended through the Marshall Plan, through Point 4, through mutual security, is one of the great chapters in the history of mankind. I'm going to stop here and just relate how that was brought home to me by one of the world's great statesmen, Adenauer. Chancellor Adenauer, whom I've known for a number of years and whom last year I visited on the heights above Baden-Baden overlooking Black Forest after the French had put an end to EDC. Adenauer told me previously, he said, you know, Senator, if Eastern Germany had a chance to vote, 95% of them would vote to join with the West. I kind of looked a little quizzically. He said, you know why? Then he answered his question. He said, you know, in every war, we Germans have applied the rule to the victor belongs the spoil. And we thought we were going to get it applied to us. When the Allies marched in, you Americans, we waited weeks, days, months, finally years, waiting for the application of that rule to the victor belongs the spoils, but you didn't apply it. You applied the rule to the victor belongs the job of rebuilding humanity, not only its economic health, but its morale, giving it new spiritual force and direction. That's why, he said, the East Germans who are living under the rule of the gang from the Kremlin have seen the difference. They come over. They see us prosperous. They see us with liberty and freedom. Over there, they're but the serfs of the state, and their economic health is very low. That's why 95% of them would vote with the West if they had a chance. I had substantially the same thing told me by a Japanese member some years ago when he came in to see me when I was chairman of the Foreign Relations, a high member of government. He said, I want to tell you, Senator, how the Japanese people feel about you Americans. And with a mist in his eyes, he told this. He said, you know, when MacArthur walked down the street at the head of his troops in Tokyo, the millions turned their backs in disgust and hate and fear. You know, we Japs have had wars and we were conquerors. We took. We knew what was coming to us. But, Senator, it didn't come. We waited weeks and months and years. Finally, something dawned on us. Here was something new. You didn't take, you gave. You not only gave economically, but you gave also of your ideas. You gave of your democratic concepts. That the land didn't all belong to a few, and it was parceled out. So he said when MacArthur left. And you people remember the occasion? He said MacArthur marched at the head of his troops. The millions stood with bowed heads, not this time with their backs turned, but with tears running down their cheeks. Why? Because they too had seen that your country and mine was something new in the history of the race. They saw that here was something unheard of. Thus the Japs spoke to me and thanked me. So my friend, America's magnificent record of generosity was bread thrown upon the waters that has come back a thousandfold. We've got allies. I'm going to tell another incident here out of the context of my speech. I told it this noon to some of the newspaper men. I heard General Romulo, who went to represent the Philippines at the Bandung Conference. And I thrilled because it was a new fact on the horizon that I had never known because I had just the opposite concept. He said, you know, Senator, when I left to go to the Bandung Conference, flying from this country, I went with fear and doubt and trepidation. I felt that what we'd been reading, that Asia and Africa were joining against the West. I felt that here was a world-shaking consequence about to come into being that would not only affect your country, but affect mine. Senator, I come back with faith, with hope, with a great confidence. I went to the Bandung Conference, and I heard the representatives of the little nations get up. What did I hear? I felt the impact of ideas. What ideas? The ideas of the Declaration of Independence. The ideas of the Gettysburg Address that Lincoln spoke at Gettysburg. The ideas of the Magna Carta. They were in the souls of the leaders of these countries. And they didn't hesitate to say to the representative of China, they didn't hesitate to say, we're against the colonialism of the West, yes, but we're against the colonialism of the East. Get out of Korea. Tell the Kremlin to get out of the countries it occupies. We're against colonialism everywhere. Not one word was spoken against your country, he said. Ah, my friends, after all, the ferment is on. And that's one of the great facts of history, that over there in the Far East, where we had thought that everything was going haywire, where the communists were going in and adding ferment. And there is ferment. But it's an economic ferment. If you were over there, you'd be part of it. If you were living in a level way down below what you ought to live. But they're talking the ideas of the Declaration of Independence, the Gettysburg Address. And I thrilled as I haven't thrilled for many a year when I heard that message from that little great man, little in stature, but great in heart and soul and mind, and a great friend of America. I recall the words of these men because to me, they are the lampposts. They are the lampposts that we must not forget. Yes, we've helped to restore West Germany to the family of nations. The people of Germany are overwhelmingly anti-communist, and their enslaved fellow nationals of East Germany would like to be with them. The people of West Germany are irrevocably a part of the Western Alliance.